Welcome to the WP Tonic This Week in WordPress and SaaS podcast, where Jonathan Denwood interviews the leading experts in WordPress, e-learning, and online marketing to help WordPress professionals launch their own SaaS.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show This Week in WordPress and SaaS. It's episode 921. We've got a fabulous founder of a fabulous WordPress-based business. We've got Enoch from Themius with us. I've totally butchered his first name. I've butchered his company's name. He doesn't care because he's just counting the money and the success, so he doesn't care. My co-host is just laughing at me because he's got used to it. So I'm going to let both of them introduce themselves, and then we're going to go straight into this fantastic interview. Enoch, can you introduce yourself quickly to the tribe and your muted?
I'm glad to be here. I think you did great with the pronunciation.
You're a very kind man. I can tell that you're a decent guy because I wouldn't be so nice about that. But thank you. It's much appreciated.
So I'm Ionut. I co-founded Themius. It's been maybe 12 years ago. I discovered WordPress, I think 14 years ago. It feels like a long time. Along the way, I've been involved a little bit in everything. So I started as a developer, doing things on our products, then starting to learn marketing, then learning more about, content marketing, about SEO, about investing lately. So I'm just trying to do whatever I was curious about and trying to grow the business in the meantime as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a fabulous discussion. You can tell that Enoch has got enormous knowledge about how to build a business in WordPress and in SaaS in general. It's just going to be a fantastic discussion. I also got my very patient and understanding co-host. Kurt, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Love to, Jonathan. My name is Kurt von Onnen. I own a company called Manana Nomas. We focus largely on membership and learning websites, and I work directly with the good folks at Lifter LMS and WP Tonic.
Thank you so much, Kurt. Like I say, we're going to be discussing how Enoch started his great business, what are some of the key things he's learned on his journey, where he thinks WordPress is in the second half of 2024, and a load of other great topics. It's going to be a fabulous interview. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of this great discussion, I've got a couple key messages from our sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I'd like to point out that we got some great special offers from the major sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional or power user, plus a newsletter that I write every week, personally myself, with the best WordPress stories and tech stories of that week. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get on that page, folks. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. So, off we go into this great interview. So, how did you get in? You know, I looked at your bio on LinkedIn. You know, you did your degree in computer science. I think you said you tried to start, I think it was on your bio page on your company's website, that you tried to start a company, and it wasn't very successful, and then you got into WordPress. Isn't that about, so maybe you can give us some background, what led you into the crazy world of WordPress and online marketing in the first place?
I would be happy to share with you. So, as you saw, I graduated in computer science, and I was very interested about, you know, how I can work from, I was based in Romania, and I was interested how I can discover the world, how I can travel, how I can work from home. And those was like really key motivation for me. So I discovered freelancer.com. It's not as popular as it used to be. And I've read something in the newspaper, or I don't know, it was 15 years ago. It was not as popular as today to work online. None of my friends were doing it. But for me, thought, okay, this is what I wanted to do. So from there it started. I started, you know, like doing some JavaScript projects and doing anything that, you know, like any project that I can take and I can figure it out how to do. And this is how I learned PHP, I learned WordPress, I learned JavaScript, and so on. Then I was working as a freelancer. I was doing quite fine, but I thought the next step maybe would be to create a company. So I one of my clients were interested in that, and this is how we started. At first, we started as an outsourcing agency. So we were getting projects from freelance websites, and then we hired I think we had two people that would help us with those projects, including myself. This is how we started. You know, we knew a little bit of WordPress, but then we ran into a problem that was very frustrating there, where our success in terms of getting the projects was based on our reviews, on our ratings that we had there. And that was completely fine because we had 4.9 or something like that. But often we will run into clients that they would, you know, like just ask for something extra to don't give us a bad review, right? So we had some situations where, okay, like, you know, like the project is done, but can you help me with this small little thing, right?
Oh, can you just help us rebuild the whole website? It's only a small thing.
And it was getting very frustrating, right? I mean, to this was one thing.
That's a very, I could tell you're an extremely diplomatic individual. That's a very diplomatic way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, what I try to focus, you know, like on things I can control. I could not have done anything about that. So I thought, okay, like that was one problem. Another problem was like our work was all over the place, right? So if I found some project on Joomla, we'll take it. If I found some project on WordPress, we'll take it. If I find some JavaScript, HTML, Java, whatever, you know, like whatever. I got the sense that, yeah, I think we will figure it out, right? I mean, I just looked at the specs and said, okay, like this looks something that can be done. So if it can be done, we can do it, right? So this was the philosophy of it. It suited our personality. I mean, me and a person that I'm still working today very well, because we like to learn new things and discover. And it was challenging. It was fun, but it was not working very well because we were not getting like really expert in anything. We were experts in getting anything done, but not experts on doing something really well, right? So we had...
I classify my whole life like that.
Yeah. And then we had those two things. So I thought, okay, like, what if we create our own website where we focus on one thing? The client ideally would find the website and they will give us work. So we don't need to rely on, you know, like our freelancer profile, and we will get a stream of clients on like niche. And because I learned before that, I learned a little bit about search engine optimization. I thought, like, I started from a keyword. I thought, what's a keyword that can bring us clients that is not too competitive? And we came across PSD to WordPress. It's not, I mean, later I realized it didn't brought us, you know, like the best type of clients, because people came with a certain expectation, certain mindset, and certain way of viewing the value of the work. But we get started from there. So this is, we launched Code in WP, offering PSD to WordPress services. And in 3 to 6 months, we got ranked on the first page and we started having people contacting us for this type of projects. And this is how we started into our journey into WordPress.
Right. I think I could go into this. You've got a lot of information there, but I'm just going to throw it over to my co-host. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. I can't help but resonate with Yona about the idea that you try to be everything to everybody and you're trying to figure out what's going to work, right? And then that frustration with we're not doing anything well. So how was it that how did you decide to niche down in the direction that you were? I mean, besides a keyword search, was it like, this is what we're best at, or this is what we have the highest profit with? Like, for me, it comes down to profit. Like, I think about all the things I can do with WordPress, and I go, well, what focus am I the most efficient at, and what generates the most profit?
At that point, we were more focused on survival. So we just thought, you know, like, we want something that will give us a stream of clients, you know, like, and we didn't care that much. I mean, we didn't know that much about the whole space, about business, about anything. So we just thought, okay, like, this would be, we had no reason to, or no, let's say, like, logic, business logic on why we picked that, but just it worked. And I think what I learned then, and I used it along the way, is I discovered that, you know, like, once you put your mind into something and focus at that thing, okay, yeah, it might be that you learn along the way that maybe is the wrong thing, but oftentimes you will figure it out once you get to focus on it. So, you know, I think for us was very important that we decided to focus on that, and of course we had a lot of wrong assumptions about it, and we ended up, you know, after 3 years closing that agency component. But, you know, like, we got into WordPress because we wanted to get more clients through the products and so on at the beginning. So, you know, like, the fact that we focused on and tried to learn that space very well, you know, like, presented us with more opportunities along the way. Even the initial idea was not a good one.
So I guess the next question then would be, if we're going to think about other listeners and viewers of this show, people that are trying to survive, right? Like you said, if they wanted to build a plugin or a theme in the WordPress marketplace today, what would be like a couple of crucial things that you'd want to share with them? What would be like, don't do this, or make sure you do this?
Yeah, I think the first mistake that we did with Themile when we launched is that we put a lot of effort and money into the platform itself. So before having products, or the products were not really great, we had a great website and a great shop, right? So, I mean, that was helpful along the way because it worked. But initially when we launched it, we had a couple of themes. We had the website, you know, like, nicely designed, the story created, but zero sales. So I would say, like, nowadays it's very easy to get started. You know, like, you don't need a store. You don't need a website. You can just use Gumroad, Freemuse. You just, you know, like, create the product and make sure that the product is good, that people like it, and so on. So don't try to think too much and concern yourself too much with, you know, like, okay, yeah, I need to create a brand, I need to create a platform, whatever. Well, you are at the very beginning and you are just one man show, right? So that was one thing for us. That was, you know, mistake that we did at the start. Something else that we did to get started, but again, I think a lot of things that worked for us were because it suited my personality quite well. We actually got into WordPress teams and saw like that can work and can generate revenue by acquiring a business. Right? So first, what we did, we with all the kind of savings that we got on the clients' projects, we acquired a website called readyteams.com. And it was a quite old website with teams that were not looking that great. It was generating, you know, like 1,000, 2,000 per month, something like that. And not even that. I mean, we got to that. It was generating a couple of hundred, I think. It was very small and as we were. But that was, I mean, for me was helpful to see that it's possible, to see how it is done. And then I just assumed the mistake that I did further. I mean, the idea was good, but then I just assumed that, yeah, it looks so easy. I can try to do it much better on a new project and so on. And I didn't really understand how that was working. But for me, how always worked well to, I'm quite impatient. So I don't like to start things from scratch to think through all the stuff. I want to get started. I want to try it out. So that's why I like to acquire, you know, existing projects that I can start directly, you know, like changing, improving, releasing an update and learning about it and so on. It gives me more, more interesting for me, more fun. But again, this suited in my personality. I don't know if usually it doesn't work out for most of the people out there, I think, to start like that, to just acquire a small product. So to kind of see how everything else works.
Yeah, I really appreciate the way that you answered that, especially at the beginning when you were talking about like a minimal viable product and launching simply and not...
That's something we don't preach, is it, Kurt?
Well, it's all the time. It's all the time because whether it's a course creator or a product developer or someone trying to build a brick and mortar business, people have these dreams of what they want something to be. You know, this awesome thing, but it's like, you got to get some customers first. You got to have an audience. You have to have something. And I like that part of your message there, quite a bit. Jonathan, over to you.
So what do you, it's a bit like our romantic life. We tend to remember our disasters, don't we? We tend to remember, it's, you know, our school life, the things that went wrong, don't we? I think we're all like that. Maybe I'm a little bit more than normal. But we tend to remember our mistakes. So are there a couple of real balls ups, a couple of real big mistakes that you've made that you're prepared to share on your business journey that comes to mind that you're gracious enough to share? Or has it all been perfect, has it?
Of course not. I think I've already shared a couple of them, right? So at the very beginning, so one mistake that we did was to... No, I mean, it was actually something that I'm thinking at the same time. I think the biggest and the most recurring, because it's, you know, like it didn't happen only once. It's like it happened along all those years to at times get disconnected from the customers. So, you know, like we start by being very focused on the product, you know, talking with the customers on customer support and releasing things and, you know, like, they ask something today, tomorrow we release it, and you know the product get great traction, you know. Like then I try to step away from that and try to look, okay, how we can grow things and etc. But at the same time, sometimes I step away too much, you know, like when I'm becoming disconnected on, you know, like what people really need and how they really use the product, and start to kind of develop some superficial thought on how I think things are working or what I think that people need. without being very in touch with the customer. And I think for me and for us, this happened a couple of times already where, you know, like at times I kind of, you know, like we grew a bit too, you know, like maybe too many layers of people from the actual customer, right? So we will have the customer support team, and then we'll have the you know, like project manager and the product owner, and then, you know, me sharing some ideas, but I'm already, you know, like kind of five levels from the customer, right? And then I don't talk with the customer support. This got us into trouble. We got back to it, and we saw improvements, and now we are again in a phase where we had this issue as well, and we are trying to see how we can, you know, like have more direct, you know, people that me or other people that make decisions, how we can be, you know, like more directly connected with the customers, but without necessarily being overwhelmed, right? And still having a overview on the business. Not being overwhelmed with the kind of day-to-day things, but managing to get a sense on, you know, like how people are using, you know, our things and what they like, what they don't like, and so on. I think that would be.
Well, I think that's fantastic. I think that's a fantastic insight, actually. What is the size of the company at the present moment? How many people work?
Now we are. Around 25 people. We used to be 35, so around this.
Yeah. So, you know, you got a focus in themes, but now you got your plugin side as well. I don't know if you had both historically. How have you coped? Is it, you know, I'm only surmising this. This is why I'm asking this question. Are you going to focus more on the plugin side and maybe buy some additional plugins? Because I don't know the world of themes. I'm just presuming the world of page builders. But on the other hand, you've got the whole, the market is in real, in the WordPress market is in real flux, isn't it? Because you got everything, all the opportunities, but also all the flux of Gutenberg, haven't you? So I don't know mentally or how your company views the prospects, really. Are you going to focus more on plugins, or do you see great opportunities in Gutenberg in general for historically a theme shop, really?
I have a lot to say, but I will start first by answering your question that, you know, like teams for us, you know, like have been going, you know, like, have been decreasing for the past, you know, like 7 years or so, right? So, nowadays, you know, like even if the complexity increased, when we started with Xerif and we were, I think I was writing about it. We were making 80,000 per month or something with a team that was very basic team. Nowadays, you know, like
Well, they were happy days, weren't they?
Yeah. nowadays, you know, like things are much more complex, you know, in terms of JavaScript and Gutenberg and all those, you know, like in terms of technology. So it's not like just simple HTML, PHP and CSS. Back then, and so you need people that are way more qualified, and then the revenues are smaller than they used to be, right?
Complexities are market opportunities gone down a bit.
Exactly. So definitely, it is not something that, you know, like we are, you know, like very much. We are not very much interested in that specific market in terms of, you know, like growing it, right? But because we still have a significant, you know, like position there, and we have recurring customers there, we are still putting quite a bit of effort, but focusing on our existing user base, right? On people that renew their subscriptions, what they need, how we can improve their experience, and try to focus on that, you know, like kind of that size of the market that, you know, like maybe they don't like Elementor, they don't want to use something else. They are familiar with our solution and they are happy to renew and try to work with them. So, this is on the team side. Teams are also still good because in some customers' perception, they see teams as a gateway to build their business. So they think like, okay, I need to build a membership website. You know, like some people still think I need to start with a theme, you know, a membership theme. I mean, we all know that, you know, like that's not really the backbone of the
it's just the terminology, starter theme, starter website, starter template. It's just the terminology for the same thing has just exploded. All these terms for trying to describe a starting point, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is interesting opportunity because, you know, if you control that customer interaction, then you can guide them to whatever membership plugin you think it makes the most sense, or you can be your own membership plugin, you know, if you develop it further and so on. So they still have some value in business value from that perspective. But obviously,
no, I'm so pleased that great minds think the same. Actually, there we go. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I think it's time. You're laughing at my jokes. I do appreciate. And your English is excellent because my Romanian is nothing. So it's been a great discussion. The guest has been laughing at my pathetic jokes. Even Kirk's been smiling. But it's holiday. It's the 4th of July, see? It's the day of independence, see? So, it's been a great discussion. We're going to go for our mid-break. We've got a couple of messages from our great sponsors who are really appreciated. It enables us to keep this show on the road. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. It's been a fabulous discussion. We've covered some great topics. It's met my expectations. Before we go into the second half, I just want to point out that WP Tonic's got a fabulous partner program. If you're looking for a technical partner, a hosting and a partner that's got real deep roots in the WordPress community that can help you with your complicated build outs, if you're a WordPress professional or power user, why don't you look at becoming a partner with WP Tonic? To find out more, we are very generous to our partners. To find out more details, all you have to do is go over to wp-tonic.com/partners. wp-tonic.com/partners. Find out what we got to offer and have a chat with me. We'd love you to become a WP Tonic partner. Me and Kurt would love that. Over to you, Kurt.
Thanks, John. I have a question that's not really part of our questions, but I think it's related, and I'm kind of excited to ask because you're not someone directly with WordPress. Like you're a third party guy that offers both products. So you have a full site editing theme and then you have block oriented themes. And I always wanted to ask somebody that wasn't under that WordPress umbrella, what's in your opinion, just your opinion, I don't need facts and figures, but in your opinion, is full site editing being adopted at a decent rate, or are you still seeing a lot of people really clinging to the block editor at this stage?
Okay, so two things. In terms of adoption, I think adoption it's quite slow on full site editing. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be. They need to be educated, don't they? You know, they just don't see the light, do they? They, you know, it's so obvious that they should just these people, they just don't understand, do they? Sorry, that was English flippancy there. I'm sorry.
But I will share a second thing that you might find interesting, because we launched like normal teams and we launched, you know, like full site editing teams. And what we see in terms of traction, if we look at the number of people that try out the team, be it classic team or be it full site editing team, the number of people that try it out and then keep it, it's kind of the same. So people are equally happy once they are in front of it. They are equally happy with it versus, you know, in full site editing versus classic. I think this is what we see. So if you look in, we launched two, NibetC and Raft, both have around 10,000 active users. They are quite high in terms of, you know, popular teams. And I was monitoring closely the numbers and I was surprised to see that, you know, like new users are satisfied. I mean, for me, I measure satisfaction by if they keep the team or not, right? Because if they don't switch to another team. So I would say like this is showing me that, you know, like people are happy to use it once they discover it. So I think the adoption will grow on that. From a business perspective, you know, the whole Gutenberg thing, the whole full site editing, whatever, it's just a nightmare, I think, because a challenge that we see is that, you know, like if you think about it, we have, for example, let's say a charts plugin, and we have a charts plugin. It's generating, I don't know, throw a number, $10,000 per month. And it's a classic, you know, like kind of classic editor, shortcut based, whatever interface plugin, right? But here comes Gutenberg, and your market overall is the same because there are not more WordPress users. It's just some users use Gutenberg, some users use the old way, right? So you need to build a new version of the plugin for, you know, like one that works for the old people, you know, with shortcodes and stuff, and one that works in Gutenberg for the new editor and new users, right? But your total revenue is the same and your market is the same, right? So this was, I think, something that I didn't really thought too much about it, you know, like when Gutenberg came, you know, like about this complexity of, you know, like, and how to deal with it, and potentially for some products, not even trying to develop a Gutenberg integration, just because of the cost and complexity to maintain two plugins for the same revenue, right? So now we ended up in Visualizer, for example, removing the Gutenberg integration after 4 years, just because it was, you know, like difficult when we want to launch a new feature or make a change to the product. We need to think about the two scenarios. I mean, how this would work in the Gutenberg editor, how this would work outside. So, overall, you know, like I think it was a difficult, transition for product business, but it's also showed opportunities. I'm not very, let's say, I think it's for the good of the WordPress, but it was, yeah, it's, I think those years are quite challenging from that perspective. And as a product owner, you need to be careful on, you know, like I think we also jumped too early on the Gutenberg train and the adoption was very slow.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your transparency on that, Yonah. It's for me, it's a very, I'm not a product person. I'm an implementer at best. And so when I talk to people that develop products.
Well, you're much more than that. You've got all your business insight, your implementer, but you've got the experience of being a hardened business consultant, haven't you?
Yeah, but it's I'm thinking more from the development standpoint. You know, I think about how does someone say, I want to make this product and then develop it for all of those different environments and then maintain it? Like, I always see it like, wow, that's like an ongoing thing. Page builders, are they a nightmare for you, or are they something that your products kind of blend into easily, like Elementor and Bricks? And, you know, everybody's got a new thing. Someone just hit me up the other day and was asking about WP Grid Builder, and I had never even heard of it before.
Yeah, I think I saw it. In terms of,
he's probably invested in it, actually, Kirk.
He said, I bought that last week.
In terms of teams, of course, the page builders are just getting the market share, right? So, of course, it's no good. But then that's clear. But in terms of plugins, they also introduce complexity because, again, there are more things that you need to consider, right? So, for example, we have an image optimization plugin. And you need to, we have a feature called Optimal. We have a feature where we try to lazy load the background images. And for that, we need to know how that is generated, right? And we use some, we identify that in Gutenberg, but we also need to identify that in Elementor. We need to identify that in Oxygen because each one is doing it in their own way, right? So depending on the plugin that you are having, you know, this can pose a problem because those builders, they have a significant market share. So you cannot ignore them. So you need to worry yourself about all this user experience, you know, because basically I think for me now, Elementor is just another WordPress in a way, right? I mean, people that get into the Elementor ecosystem, they use, you know, like sync. They have their own forms.
That's very insightful. So I recently had their chief marketing officer, whatever his title is, and they are part of WordPress, but they're not part of WordPress. They're in a strange, and you can see that in how they position themselves or have it oscillates from one to the other. You can see it. Do you think I'm on the right track there?
What do you mean by on the right?
Well, part of them wants to build a Wix environment, but when the sales decline because it's the developer, it's the independent developer agency market that really grew Elementor. And they're not really interested because they're in the WordPress world. So they're looking more for a plugin, not a Wix. So they're always oscillating because the driver of their growth is the agency, the small power user, individual agency model. So they're always, because they're driven by income, because the figures collapse a bit, they get more focus on WordPress then. Do you forget?
Yeah. I think I agree with you here, and it's not only Elementor. I think in some, we are trying actually kind of the same thing with Elementor. I agree. I think they are trying to create a sort of Wix platform, but getting users from WordPress, right? And of course, like you are saying, you know, like it's a difficult transition to make. You know, like people don't really want that. WordPress is not happy with that behavior, neither. I mean, the automatic and so on, to trying to sort of just move people away to some other things. So it's a difficult game that they are playing, and I think it's difficult. We are a little bit in the same position with our SaaS solution that I was mentioning, Optimal. We started it as a SaaS. It's a WordPress plugin. Most of our revenue is coming from WordPress, but at the same time, we have the features to be like a digital asset management solution that integrates well with a Laravel project, right? So we are trying to go that way, but yeah, at the same time,
it's tricky, isn't it? I was discussing this with Kurt, and because there's this concept WordPress as a service. It was bandied around a lot, and a few people tried it, and I don't think anybody's really successfully. The only people that really, in some ways, is Animator, but they've got their own problems.
They've got their own problems
with trying to do that.
But I think it's a bit tricky.
I think there will be somebody that will be able to do it, because I'm not sure it's a technical or a marketing messaging positioning problem. I haven't really worked it out myself, really.
I think it's so. I think, in my view, OptiMonster managed to do it very well.
Ah, you're mentioning Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory, are you? So Willy Wonka, have you been tempted just to sell your business to Willy Wonka and just take the money and retire, you know, or invest? Just become an investor. Have you been tempted to take the coin from Willy Wonka?
not really, but I was talking with Syed in various occasions. You know,
he doesn't talk to me. He only sends me letters.
Okay. No, for me, I'm talking with him. I mean, he was also very kind to give me some good advice in the past. So, but I was never interested in selling the business, because I like doing what I'm doing. You know? So to answer that, not really. But I think we share some, you know.
Can I interrupt? I'm being rude here, but for the right reason. Why do you think, because so many businesses, obviously they've got a good price, but why do you think there's not more opportunity when you want to sell a mature WordPress business that's making good returns, that's well managed like your own? I get the feeling that there isn't a lot of choices in the market to sell a well-run WordPress business, and the multiple that you should get is much lower than a SaaS-based business. Have you got any insights why you feel that? You know, because you said you're interested also being an investor.
Yeah, we are doing this. So I think more than half of our products are acquired. We bought businesses, you know, like in worth a couple of millions. So we are doing this as well, at much lower scale than Syed, but we have been doing it since, you know, like 12 years ago.
So you're a chocolate factory mini.
Yeah. We are trying, we have our own approach and our own mindset about it and so on, but it's something that I like as well. So I have a perspective on that. I mean, on what you are saying. So when you look at the WordPress business versus when you look at other type of business, why sometimes the valuation is lower? There are a couple of reasons. One, it used to be a problem of the lifetime licenses, right? So when I look at the business that sold lifetime licenses, that for me, it's a liability, right? I will subtract that from the, you know, like, so I value the business, right? And then I will subtract the lifetime licenses that were sold, right? Because that means people that I need to support. And that's
a lifetime support commitment, isn't it? With no opportunity to make any money from it.
Yeah, but also people that I cannot sell in the future, because they are, you know, like, they already, you know, like, bought for their life, right? So that's one thing that's, you know, like, pushing down the valuations. Recently, that's, you know, like, this is changing. Then you have this thing all the WordPress businesses are rely on WordPress, right? So they are not independent businesses that have, like a SaaS business, you have a direct relationship with the consumer. In a WordPress business, if, you know, like, some volunteer in the WordPress team or plugins team decide that your plugin is no good in the repository, that's a risk that you are taking, right? When you run a SaaS business and you have a contract, a relationship with the client,
they are happy, you are happy, it's fine, right? When you have a WordPress business, like in the same that you have an app in the App Store, it's not only about you and the customer. You know, if automatic or people that are running the repositories decide to make some change in the rankings, in the design, getting your plugin out of the repository for whatever reason, that's a risk, right? So when you are looking at the valuation, basically valuation, it's a question of risk and a WordPress business due to this thing, it's more risky business than a business that it's direct, right? You are talking, you know, selling directly to the customer, you know, and you have, and your acquisitions channels are diversified. Here, for 90% of the WordPress businesses, WordPress repository is more than 90% of the, let's say.
I think that's one of the key factors. The lifetime deals don't help. If I'm not against lifetime deals, I want to make that clear. I think if you're looking to get cash flow and offering doing a lifetime deal on one or two days of the year, I don't see anything, because the kind of marketing buzz that you can get from it, and the goodwill that you're building can be beneficial. But out of those scenarios, it's the kiss of death, isn't it? But I think this last point that you've pointed out is one of the biggest drivers, isn't it? Dependent, especially if you've got a free product and exactly. your company's driven by having access by turning so many of those free customers into premier customers, isn't it? I think that's where it gets really dicey, doesn't it?
Exactly. That's the main issue. And most of the successful WordPress plugins, they have a freemium model, right? There are very, very few that are very successful, like WP Rocket, or there are some others that are premium only, and they can afford to use whatever license they want. They can afford to restrict the poor products in ways that they want to limit the distribution. So it's a different business. And I think that would be more valuable. They are still, you know, like they are still at the, let's say, they are still the risk of, you know, like WordPress, you know, changing things in the core and so on. So they don't rely on the repository as an acquisition channel. But they rely on how WordPress works, like Gutenberg being released or not, and whatever changes, or maybe some caching solution being, you know, bundled in the core and stuff like that, right? So they are still, they still have some risks. So that's my thinking. And then why there are not more people investing in businesses? I think there is. A quite big risk. I mean, you know, like from it's even on the things that we acquire, you know, like we are not usually, you know, we are not accounting on very, you know, extraordinary returns. So the returns that we are acquiring usually businesses, it's we are hoping for something like 25% per year, with considering all those risks, right? And you know, just the stock market for the past years returned, you know, like more than 10% in average. So it's a premium on that, but it's, you know, that's correlated with the risk that you are taking. So I don't think it's necessarily a great deal. Of course, Syed can unlock much more through the network that he created, right? And through the multitude of various businesses in different niches and putting all of it together, right? But that's a new unique position.
Oh, well, that's one way of putting it. I'll put it a different way, but we won't go down in that road. I'm going to throw over the last two questions over to Kurt, because he's going to sleep, Kurt. Sorry, I'm in a sarcastic mood. I'm in holiday mode, see, Kurt. So I'm going to leave the next two questions to you, Kurt.
Well, when I go through the menu on Themile, I can see that you guys already have, you know, some AI elements, right? So our next question is, like, how do you see AI kind of changing that online business model, you know, including your own for the next like year and a half? Like, do you think you got a double and triple and quadruple down on AI, or do you think the hype is kind of starting to dissipate and maybe we're just figuring out how to actually really use the tool?
Yeah, I think I was just seeing something the other day that the only people that are making money besides Nvidia are the consultants, because every business is asking themselves the same question, right? You know, like I should pay someone to tell me what I should do with AI, right? And no one is really making it.
I wish I was one of those consultants.
So I'm you know, like generally I'm confused to where things will be going, what's going on and so on. But I do have some thoughts. One is I think AI at this point is both, you know, like underestimated and overestimated. It's overestimated, but by people that are not familiar with technology, I talk with a lot of entrepreneurs and they will believe that, I don't know, AI tomorrow will make a building with computers and people inside, whatever, right? They imagine like AI will, you know, create everything. And it's underestimated, I think, in fields like programming or content writing, where I think we see that things are changing, but I don't think we can grasp the magnitude of the change. And I think the impact will be at a scale that we cannot anticipate. That's my perspective now on AI. In terms of the business value, I was very concerned to get involved in it because I was always asking, you know, so first idea that I had was, you know, like let's use AI to generate WordPress websites, you know, automatically, right? And there are now some solutions that are doing that. You know, you can use, you know, different prompts to, okay, what colors I should use, what images, what sections, and AI will generate like a dentist website for you, right? And that can be done, right? But then I was thinking, okay, I can do that. That's cool. But this is what Astra will do as well, and this is what other people will do as well. So what's the, you know, like it's just, I will keep, you know, like competing on the same thing, and everyone will just, because it's not to do it is not like a high barrier to entry. So that's the challenge, right? You know, so we created an AI chatbot. I think there are a thousand of AI chatbots, you know, like that appeared, because it's not, let's say, trivial, but it's not something that's complicated, right? So in terms of business value, I'm still struggling to see where, you know, like how we can, you know, like use it and if there is any opportunity or not, because I'm looking at an opportunity that can be defended and not something that, you know, like I do it today and Jonathan, you do it tomorrow because you see that I did it, right? And it will take you another day to just...
Well, I'll never take you on. You're too sharp for me. I'm not that stupid. I know my limits. I would never take you on in business. You've been much more successful than me. For God's sake, I'm a nightmare. But, you know, you're logical, unlike me. Sorry.
It's kind of to say, yeah, but it will change the business. I think it will change the business in my perspective. I don't know if it was obvious to you by looking at our business, but in fact, the bigger part of our business was the content business that we had alongside the product business. So we had a blog on Coding WP and now it's WP Shout. We have a very big blog on Tmile. And those were, you know, like the impact there was very, very major. Because basically most of the blogs nowadays, what they do is like you aggregate information. So you hire writers to aggregate information. So they will research online, read 3-4 articles and put something, put a nice summary together. But now that's no value in that. Because it's something that can be done unless you can do it exceptionally well, which, you know, like 90% of the writers cannot do it. It's no value in that because AI will do it. And even if you do it well, it will cost it. So our costs were like $300 per article. and AI cost to do something that's quite close to that. It's like $0.1. So it's, you know, like it's just a big gap, you know. So there also there will be a major impact to that. That
well, I think the way to get over that is you got to add video. You got to add video content. You got to be a podcaster. You got to be an influencer. You got to show Google. You got to show Google other signs in
exactly.
Up in your article that you actually know what you're talking about. You got to give clear signals to Google because Google's quite aware of what you're up to, and they're just making a decision. Are you somebody that's just piling on 600 articles a month and you know nothing about the niche that you're just trying to build an affiliate site on, or are you using AI in a logical, and by doing other things you're adding value? Google's not stupid, but they're just making judgment calls on all these websites. Apart from the chocolate factory, he can do fuck all what he likes and gets away with it. I don't know how he does it. He must send Google a big check every month. Don't sue me. It's only my opinion, sir. Please don't do that. I'm sorry. Back over to you, Kirk. Sorry. I was mouthing off there, Kirk, wasn't I?
Just a little. The coffee's working. So our final question, the one that'll get you, you know, time served on the show. If you had your own time machine like Doctor Who and H.G. Wells, something, and you could go back to the beginning of when your career started, what advice do you think you would give yourselves?
don't come on this podcast.
No, I had a great time, and I the questions were quite nice. But let me think about it. It's not something in particular, you know, that it's, I think when things work out for you, as it worked for me, I don't, you know, like, I don't usually think in that way. I don't try to think, okay, what I could have been doing differently. When things are failing, like, for example, we got into this issue with content sites and Google changing everything, It's at those times where I question everything, right? When I think, you know, like why we got into this and how we do it and so on. So here I do have a lot of answers on, you know, like, you know, if I go back in time, what I would have done differently. And like as Jonathan said, you know, like I would just try to, you know, like hold to my belief of, you know, like trying to create great content and don't necessarily at times maybe rush to publish too many things that are, you know, like the quality controls are not in place and so on. And that proven out to cause, you know, quite big problems down the road. So in those scenarios, it's easy for me to think, but when things work out, you know, like I would not change anything, right? Because they work out. I guess for me, but this very personal, an advice that I try to give to myself from time to time is just not take things too serious, right? And that's true from when I started. So I was, you know, like working, you know, like crazy hours. I was not paid. I was not getting any money for 3 years when I started. I just wanted to make it work, and I was doing, you know, like tremendous effort. I mean, this was the case because I was also very inexperienced and stupid as well, right? So it was kind of something in my own that caused, you know, like that the situation. But an advice that I would give to myself, yeah, it's to you know, like don't stress too much, you know, like, and don't take things too seriously, and try to enjoy the journey, you know, like, and of course there will be stressful times, there will be challenges, try to be mindful and try to be constructive, and don't stress too much. But that's, again, I don't know if we apply to other people, but apply to me.
No, that's perfect. I like that. It's don't beat yourself up so much. Give yourself a breath.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a fabulous discussion. I've really enjoyed it. It's met my expectations. Hopefully later on in the year, you agree to come back on the show. I've really loved it. You might come on the round table show if you're up for it. Never know. Our monthly round table show is where WordPress developers and people like yourself come to end their career. It's
I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah. So what's the best way for people to find out more about you and your company?
So you can, find more about me. You can visit my website at janutsn.com. I have, a couple of articles there, and you can get in touch. On Twitter, I'm not super active, but at HackingLife7. And then you can learn more about Themile on Themile website. If you have suggestions, if you are using any of our products, I'm happy to listen and to discuss.
Right. We're going to end the show now. If you want to support the show, please share this great interview on social media, comment. And if you do that, that's really helpful. And our audience is growing, which I'm very appreciative of. We'll be back next week. We've got some fabulous guests in July. I'm always amazed at the quality people that are prepared to come on this show. I think it's shown in this great interview. We will be back next week, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.